You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
From the United Church National Conference, just ended in Kelowna, to the upcoming concert of Leonard Cohen in Tel Aviv, the boycott, divestment, and sanctions campaign against Israel increasingly is being publicly debated. Meanwhile, the uncritical supporters of Israel's state structures, policies, and practices want to kill this public discussion and stuff the corpse back into a dark closet. Open discussion or indecent burial? What does the future hold? To explore this issue, I'm joined by Sid Schneid. He's co-chair of the national organization Independent Jewish Voices, and we've reached him at his home in Surrey. Good morning, Sid, and welcome to Red Eye.
Good morning. Thanks.
Your organization, Independent Jewish Voices, has taken a decision to support the Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions campaign, BDS for short. Why did you take that decision?
Well, we came into existence about 15 months ago at a founding meeting in Toronto, bringing together Jews from across the country who share a couple things in common. One is a total dissatisfaction with existing organizations that purport to speak for members of the Jewish community, but who are, in fact, merely fronts for Israel and all its actions. And in direct, close parallel with that, members of the organization are concerned about the actions of Israel and want to do something about it, and have come to the conclusion that there's a need for an organization that is Jewish in order to provide an antidote to the people who want to dominate, members of the community who want to dominate the whole subject and support Israel unqualifiedly.
And was there in the discussion about adopting actually a boycott campaign, were there qualms among the membership about taking that step?
At our founding meeting in Toronto in 2008, there were some people, particularly among the younger members, who wanted to embrace boycott, divestment, and sanctions on the spot. And they were really frustrated about some of the older, more conservative members who wanted to take this a step at a time. So the compromise that was reached at the founding meeting was that we would spend the next year, Independent Jewish Voices as an organization, would spend the next year studying the issue of boycott, divestment, and sanctions, and come back and deal with it at the 2009 annual general meeting, which took place in June. And our Independent Jewish Voices group in Vancouver, meeting on its own in the spring, passed a boycott, divestment, sanctions resolution and sent it to the national group, to the AGM that took place in June, where it was passed with a majority of probably greater than 95%.
And were there any confirmations that this was a productive way to proceed?
Well, there were some qualms expressed in the handful of people who didn't want the organization to embrace BDS at the annual general meeting. They were afraid that this would leave some members or potential members behind, and that it was a step too far. But the irony is that in the aftermath of our passing the boycott, divestment, sanctions resolution, numbers, tens of people across the country have been approaching the organization wanting to join because we have taken the position. So it's interesting to see where people are at and how their views are developing on this issue.
Now, the Canadian Jewish Congress, which is an advocate for Israeli policy, launched a vigorous public campaign against the United Church of Canada this past week for the church's effort to debate a boycott resolution. And they denounced that resolution and the language of promoting a boycott as anti-Semitic. Could you tell us a bit about the mainstream media coverage for the viewpoint of the Canadian Jewish Congress?
Well, this is an ongoing frustration for us. One of the reasons that we put Independent Jewish Voices together was to break through the media monopoly that groups like Canadian Jewish Congress and B'nai B'rith have in the Canadian media, to read the press of this country, you'd get the impression that Jews are 1,000% unquestioning supporters of anything and everything that Israel does, when I know from my daily experience that that's not the case. So we went to Kelowna to support the people, in our allies in the church, who put forth this set of resolutions. They were motivated by the best of motivations, by a sense of outrage and horror at what several of their delegates had seen in a recent delegation to Palestine. And we think that they were doing the right thing, and we were there to tell them that they were doing the right thing and to support them against the attacks, the accusations of being anti-Semitic in doing so. And we got a very, very positive response from the delegates there, who were almost getting dispensation from Jews and telling them it was okay to look at this issue, which they should look at as they look at all other issues of human rights in the world.
And did the media give you coverage, or just the Canadian Jewish Congress viewpoint was, I'm speaking here, the mainstream media was given coverage?
We got good coverage from CBC Radio out of Vancouver, and we got good coverage in the local newspapers in Kelowna. But as far as I can tell, we've been absolutely shut out by the Asper-owned newspapers nationally, the National Post, the Sun, the Gazette, et cetera, their whole chain. I haven't seen any mention of our intervention whatsoever.
Were there, I know there were articles, editorial op-ed pieces by the Canadian Jewish Congress that appeared in the mainstream media across the country, but I'm not clear in terms of letters. Were letters published that presented an alternate viewpoint to that of the Canadian Jewish Congress, or were those sections of the newspaper also closed to critics?
Well, it was absolutely amazing to read the newspapers at the end of the week that led into the United Church Conference, because the Asper newspapers, as well as the Globe and Mail, printed almost verbatim propaganda pieces from the Canadian Jewish Congress about warning the United Church of the ultimate rupture in relations between the church and the Jewish community. Again, they're speaking for the Jewish community if these resolutions proceeded. So I wrote a letter to the editor, and several other people did, to the Globe and Mail, and much to my pleasant surprise, I think it was Monday of this week, there were four letters critical of the position of the Canadian Jewish Congress printed on the same day by the Globe and Mail. I don't remember anything like that happening before. So I don't know whether to read this as a change in the winds or just an accident, but we were pleased in any event.
Now, you attended the United Church Conference itself, and you began to describe a little bit of the exchanges you had with delegates. I wonder if you could elaborate a little bit more on their attitude to the accusation from the Canadian Jewish Congress that they were being anti-Semitic.
Well, this is something that we've had an ongoing concern about, the ability for the Canadian Jewish Congress and similar organizations to absolutely shut down discussion and debate about Israel and Palestine by invoking anti-Semitism. And the thing that we found when we got up there was that the members of the church are absolutely appalled that anybody should consider them anti-Semitic. And unfortunately, this strategy on the part of the Canadian Jewish Congress played a major role in making people gun-shy once again about addressing these issues. So there were three of us there from the national organization. We were holding discussions with delegates to the church twice a day at noon and in the evening, asking them to come talk to us, ask us questions, air any concerns they had. And the thing that we found was very interesting is that these people were very well informed on this about the issues related to Israel and Palestine, and they were coming to us almost for validation about these concerns, for assurance from us that the, taking a position on those concerns would not be anti-Semitic, and we, of course, we did that.
In the end, what decision did the church conference take?
It was a very interesting series of events. In our view, the resolutions on the matter of boycott, divestment, and sanctions should have been more tightly coordinated going into the convention, because there was some overlap among them and there was some mutual mutually inconsistent positions taken by four different resolutions. But in addition to that, the Canadian Jewish Congress and the B'nai B'rith and other organizations like that focused on some background briefing materials and that they went over the top in insisting were anti-Semitic. So there was debate on this, all these issues, both the resolutions and the background, beginning after lunch on Tuesday, and the whole afternoon was supposed to be dedicated to that. Attempt was made to mollify the Canadian Jewish Congress by passing a motion to throw out all the background information so that that was no longer an issue. And then at the end of the day, the whole issue was put over until Thursday because they had the day off on Wednesday. So when they came back on Thursday, there was a whole new resolution presented, which had the one that ended up passing. And that, although it didn't go as far as we had hoped it would go in terms of an overall endorsement of boycott, divestment, and sanctions, it adopts many of the positions of something called the Amman Call, which the World Council of Churches put out 2 years ago. And I commend that to your listeners to Google the phrase Amman Call, A-M-M-A-N, and it's a very complete position of the World Council of Churches on the crisis in Israel and Palestine. So they adopted that as part of this resolution and left it to the congregations across the country to come up with their own actions, if they so chose, on the, whether or not to participate in boycott, divestment, and sanctions. And the interesting thing is to see the reaction of the Canadian Jewish Congress and B'nai B'rith to this same resolution. Canadian Jewish Congress responded by thanking United Church for casting out or rejecting what they had deemed to be an anti-Semitic position. While we don't agree with B'nai B'rith ideologically, they read the resolution ultimately passed much more closely, and they perceive what is there, which is a major move forward on the part of the church in terms of actually taking hold of the issue of boycott, divestment, and sanctions, and endorsing discussion and potential actions if congregations so choose.
I noticed in a video that the church itself made that a spokesperson made a comparison between the way the church approached the position of gay rights and the way it is proceeding with this resolution on boycott.
Well, this is a really interesting experience for me personally during the week, because there were some very emotional, moving, historical interludes for the members of the church assembled. One was a retrospective on the way they had handled the issue of gay rights. And not knowing anything about this, it was really fascinating. I gathered that 20 years ago, the issue of embracing gay rights was brought to the church, and that was very highly contentious among all the members there. But they worked their way through it, and now the church has gone to the forefront nationally and internationally on the issue of support for gay rights. And I was trying to say to delegates that this was the situation in Palestine was analogous. Taking on the Israel lobby and the slander of anti-Semitism is initially traumatic, but it, as in every major social crisis where there are difficult issues, it's something that has to be done. And that down the road, people will look back in the same way they do on the issue of gay rights, that they accept it and understand it as an integral part of the overall social justice perspective.
Now, there's also a debate about the pros and cons of boycott, divestment, and sanctions in progressive circles, like rabble.ca. Recently, Rick Salutin wrote a column opposing BDS, and then there was a counter-argument made by Jenny Petto supporting BDS. What are your thoughts about Rick Salutin's opposition to that campaign?
Salutin argues that boycott, divestment, and sanctions doesn't tend to have the desired effect. And I found his a strange argument, but he said, look at the boycott of the United States on Cuba and on Iraq, and look at South Africa. First of all, I don't think the situations are at all analogous among themselves, and secondly, I don't think that they're analogous to the situation in Palestine, except in so far as the case of South Africa. the case of Cuba and Iraq involved embargoes by the United States, the most powerful country in the world, trying to throttle the societies of Cuba and Iraq to bend them to their will by starving them to death, keeping medical supplies out, keeping educational supplies out, just trying to bring them to their knees. So that is not what we purport to do on the issue of boycott, divestment, and sanctions for Israel. Secondly, he said that it didn't work in the case of South Africa. He is the first person I know on the left to say that boycott, divestment, sanctions did not work in South Africa. It is invariably invoked by people who were involved in the struggle, like Benjamin Tutu, the Desmond Tutu, sorry, the Archbishop in South Africa, who has played such a prominent role in the liberation struggle there. Recently, Ronnie Kasrils, who had been a member of the African National Congress, was in Vancouver speaking on the same subject. They universally see boycott, divestment, sanctions as having played an important part in bringing down the apartheid regime.
The springboard for Rick Saluten's argument is a campaign to get performer Leonard Cohen to abide by the boycott of Israel and not perform in Tel Aviv as he's scheduled to do. Could you just tell us a little bit about that campaign in relation, the BDS campaign in relation to Leonard Cohen?
Well, what's happened is that international organizers of the Palestinian BDS campaign have asked Cohen to cancel his planned concert for Tel Aviv that's scheduled for September. And they have picketed outside some of the venues of his concerts in New York and London and elsewhere. Initially, it's my understanding that Cohen was silent on the subject, but he was getting more and more pressure, so he made some arrangement to put on a concert in Ramallah, and he got Amnesty International to support the whole idea of give the legitimacy of its name to the effort. And so this, rather than quietening the waters on the issue, has led to an international campaign to get Amnesty International to change its mind. There's an Irish pianist and composer, Raymond Dean, who has been a prominent participant and sponsor and activist in Amnesty, has terminated his membership in Amnesty over this issue. And there's other examples that are similar to that. People are trying to say it is not up to Cohen to decide individually whether or not to do this. The cause has been called for, the cause of BDS has been called for on part of all of Palestinian society, and people don't want the issue fudged by a concert to be put on in Ramallah to, quote-unquote, balance a concert in Tel Aviv.
Briefly, considering the recent debate in the United Church on the Rabble website, the controversy around Leonard Cohen, how would you describe the progress of the effectiveness of the BDS campaign?
I think what's happening on the issue itself and more broadly is that people are finally beginning to feel the freedom to honestly and frankly take a look at the issue, debate it, and discuss it the way they've never been in the past. And that's probably the single most important aspect of the whole thing. For the last 40, 50, 60 years, Israel and its actions have been sacrosanct and untouchable, and anybody who dared to apply the same standards that should be applied to any country, to Israel, was immediately castigated, smeared, slandered as an anti-Semite. And that is working less and less, and the more people come to grips with this, as the members of the United Church did in Kelowna, the more progress we will make. We can begin to get beyond the catchwords and slogans and get on to ending the crisis in Israel and Palestine.
Well, thanks a lot for speaking with us this morning, Sid.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
See you.
I've been speaking with Sid Schneid. He's co-chair of the national organization Independent Jewish Voices, and their website is independentjewishvoices.ca.